Shiva Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Jaya Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravajikacharya Stosat Shishimana Divine Grace Sesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Iskand Bibidi Founder Charya Srila Prabhupada Ki Granthalad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Gopamanandi Hari Hari Bo. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 11th chapter, text number 9. Whoops, text number 10, sorry. Krinihi bo palaniti. Krinihi bo palaniti. Shrutva satvaramachyuta. Shrutva satvaramachyuta. Balarti danyam adaya. Balarti danyam adaya. Yayo sarva palaprada. Yayo sarva palaprada. Krini bo palaniti. Shrutva satvaramachyuta. Palarti danyam adaya. Yayo sarva palaprada. Others? Satpanamachuta. Would any of our guests like to have a go? It's phonetic. You just sound it out. You're welcome to try if you like. Any brave souls out there? Okay, no problem. All right. Greenie, please come and purchase. Bo, O neighborhood residents. Balani, ripe fruits. Iti, thus. Shrutva, hearing. Satvaram, very soon. Achyuta, Krishna. Balaarti, as if he wanted some fruits. Danyam adaya, capturing some grains of paddy. Yayo, went to the fruit vendor. Sarva pala prada, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can give all kinds of fruit to everyone, had now become in need of fruits. Okay, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. That's that person right there. That's the founder and leading teacher of our tradition movement. Okay, so here's the translation. Once a woman selling fruit was calling, O inhabitants of Rajabhumi, if you want to purchase some fruits, come here. Upon hearing this, Krishna immediately took some grains and went to barter as if he needed some fruits. Purport. Aborigines generally go to the villagers to sell fruits. How much the aborigines were attached to Krishna is here described. Krishna, to show his favor to the aborigines, would immediately go purchase fruits, bartering with paddy in his hand, as he had seen others do. Now I'm going to go ahead and read the next verse and read the next translation and explanation, because it relates to this one. It's just these two verses. And then I'll kind of try to unpack it for you. Pala vikrayini tasya chuta danya karadravyam palar apuraya ratnai pala bandam apuricha. Translation. While Krishna was going to the fruit vendor very hastily, most of the grains he was holding fell. Nonetheless, the fruit vendor filled Krishna's hands with fruits, and her fruit basket was immediately filled with jewels and gold. Okay, so can you visualize that? What's going on? Krishna's like a little child. He's about, in this, probably what, two, three? It's like that, two-year-old boy, three-year-old. Just able to just start walking. So he sees this fruit vendor. I'll just read this and then I'll kind of explain it. Okay, so it says here, while Krishna was going to the fruit, did I read that? Yeah. Okay, so purport. In the Bhagavad Gita 9:27, Krishna says, Patanam pushpam palam toyam yome bhakti prachati taraham bhakti paritam ashnami prayatatmanha. Krishna is so kind that if anyone offers him a leaf, a fruit, flower, or water, he will immediately accept it. The only condition is that these things should be offered with bhakti. Yome bhakti prachati. Bhakti means love and devotion. Otherwise, if one is puffed up with false prestige, thinking, I have so much opulence and I'm giving something to Krishna, one's offering will not be accepted by Krishna. The fruit vendor, although a woman belonging to the poor aborigine class, dealt with Krishna with great affection, saying, Krishna, you have come to me to take some fruit in exchange for grains. Although the grains have fallen, but still you may take whatever you like. Thus she filled Krishna's palms with whatever fruits he could carry. In exchange, Krishna filled her whole basket with jewels and gold. From this incident, one should learn that anything offered to Krishna with love and affection, from this incident, one should learn that for anything offered to Krishna with love and affection, Krishna can reciprocate millions of times over, both materially and spiritually. The basic principle involved is an exchange of love. Therefore, Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita, Yat karoshi, yat asnasi, yat jahosi, didasi, yat tapashasi, kuntaya, tat karushvar madarpanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. With love and affection, one should try to give something to Krishna from one's source of income. Then one's life will be successful. Krishna is full in all opulences. He does not need anything from anyone. But if one is prepared to give something to Krishna, that is for one's own benefit. The example given in this connection is that when one's real face is decorated, the reflection of one's face is automatically decorated. Similarly, if we try to serve Krishna with all our opulences, we as parts and parcels or reflections of Krishna will become happy in exchange. Krishna is always happy, for he is Atmarama, fully satisfied with his own opulence. Yeah, that was a little prayer to my spiritual master to give me the intelligence to be able to do this nicely. Okay, so first I think I'll start by kind of describing the scene a little bit, just, you know, make sure everybody's clear what's going on here. So this is taking place in a rural setting, like a village kind of setting. Krishna is a name for the Supreme Person. You know, we believe that God's a person. He's got a name, he's got form, he's got qualities, he's got activities. And every now and then he appears here on earth. Generally speaking, he resides in the spiritual world, which is beyond this material world. Actually, this, I didn't plan to have this here, but this, the cover of this book gives a really nice picture of our picture of reality. I'll actually describe it a little bit, and then I'll just pass it out there so everybody can have a better look. If you can see from where you are, if you've got good eyes, you'll be able to see here in the middle here is like a depiction of the spiritual world. And basically in the spiritual world there's planets, you know, it's quite similar to here, but it's all spirit, not matter. We generally tend to think of spirit as something of being amorphous, no form, no nothing, you know, just... But our conception of spirit is that it's got everything. You know, there's form, there's everything. There's all the sense experiences are there, but they're spiritual. Anyway, so there's beyond the material world, there's a spiritual world. That's where Krishna eternally resides, along with many associates. You know, many associates. Some who are kind of equally as powerful, or more or less on an equal level with him, but the vast majority are... individuals who are, as was mentioned in the last sentence here, this purport, parts and parcels or reflections of Krishna. In other words, there's Krishna, you know, the supreme being, and there's the rest of us who are maintained by him. And that's what we call our eternal constitutional position. We're eternal servants of God. So in the spiritual world, there's Krishna and different expansions of Krishna that are, you know, throughout the spiritual world. And then the vast majority of the living beings in the spiritual world are spirit souls that are, whose constitutional position is to serve Krishna with love and devotion eternally. And that's actually our real identity. See, we actually, originally, we're all of us, we're residing in the spiritual world with Krishna or some expansion of Krishna on some spiritual planet. So we can pass this book out now, and you can kind of, everybody can have a look at it, because I put a bookmark in a place where it actually gives a description of what's in the cover there, but you can have a look and just pass it around. So yeah, we all started off there, and it basically is an ideal situation. And unfortunately, due to misuse of our free will, some of us have come here to this material world, which isn't the best of all possible places. The analogy that's always used by my spiritual master and even predecessor Acharyas is, and to make it easy to understand, it's like the relationship between living as a free citizen or being in a prison. Okay? It's a lot more pleasant to be a free citizen than it is to be a prisoner. I had a friend who, over the last few years, was in prison, and so he described to me what it was like, and it wasn't very pleasant. You know, they put you, it's like you're, he's like in a little cement, 10 by 8 or 5, you know, thing with bars, it's concrete, not even a proper toilet, just a sink to kind of clean yourself up with, and you sleep on a concrete slab, and you know, so the conditions weren't very nice. On top of that, the staff there, they're not particularly pleasant. They really do go out of their way to give you a hard time. You know, the guards and so forth, and the other prisoners, that's probably maybe the worst part of it, being in prison, is you have to, the association, you know, dealing with the other prisoners. So all in all, it's a hellish experience. It was a pretty hellish experience. And he's not there anymore, but he's glad he was out, and it was really, you know. So it's kind of an analogy there. You know, it's like being in the material world is like being in prison, and being being the free citizen is like, well, being in the spiritual world is like being the free citizen. In other words, this material world is nowhere near as good as being in the spiritual. And here we're in material bodies. We're forced to get old. We're forced to get sick. We're forced to die. To start off with. And then there's so many other different trials and tribulations, problems we have to deal with throughout our lives. You know, even at best, it's very challenging and can be difficult. And at worst, we don't need to mention. But so the idea is this: that we're not really meant to be here. I mean, this is not, as I mentioned, it's not our original home. Our original home is in the spiritual world with God or Krishna. And we can go back there. We can go back there. And that's what Krishna wants. Krishna wants us to be back there. And that's part of the reason why, or pretty much, well, part of, almost the whole reason why he comes here periodically to this material world in an attempt to help us, you know, understand that we made a mistake and we should try to rectify that mistake and go back and live with him eternally, you know, in the spiritual world. It's just like, imagine you're a parent and you have a child, you know, who's maybe your age, the age of some of you guys, and gets very confused and goes out and does a bunch of dumb things and, you know, leaves home and is really living in a very deplorable condition. And the parents will do everything they can. You as a parent, you probably do everything you could to try to, you know, communicate somehow or another to your offspring that, hey, look, please come home. It's okay. You know, we're not worried about what happened. And just come home and we'll work it all out. You know, and you as a parent, you would try to put your best foot forward, so to speak, make it as attractive as you possibly could to have that, you know, confused offspring come back. But you couldn't force him or her, and you wouldn't really want to trick them, because you'd want them to come back of their own volition, you know. So being prepared to try to work out that relationship. See, so that's what Krishna wants. Krishna's not interested in forcing us to come back. He could. Krishna could force us back to the spiritual world. He could trick us back to the spiritual world, but he doesn't want that. You know, I think I read here in the purport, it's something about loving exchange. Someplace, where was it saying that? What you mean? The basic principle, yeah. Krishna can reciprocate many millions of times, both material. The basic principle involved is an exchange of love. So that's what Krishna is interested in, an exchange of love. So, you know, if you're forcing somebody to come back to your, if you, as a parent, if you're forcing your kid to come back to the house, or if you're tricking them, then it's, you know, okay, you might be able to do it, but it's not going to have the taste. You know, you're interested in an exchange of love, that your offspring is there of their own free will and they're wanting to interact with you like that. So that's what Krishna wants. And he wants that very much. And that's why he appears. He comes into the material world periodically in his eternal spiritual form. And he performs activities which, you know, he knows will be recorded and spread around and everything. And these activities are meant to help the people who are, you know, the human beings who are living here in this world understand that, well, okay, you know, maybe I should, you know, try to do something to reestablish this favorable relationship I have with Krishna. It's to get us motivated, and, you know, to inspire us and get us motivated to want to reestablish our loving relationship with Krishna or God. So that's the general idea. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, so now this particular little episode here, what's going on here, is that, as I mentioned, Krishna's just a little 2, 3, maybe 4-year-old child here, very young. And he's in the village, And he sees this lady. She's referred to as an aborigine. Aborigine. Is that how you pronounce it? Aboriginal? I always say aboriginal, but aborigine. Okay, so I looked that word up in the dictionary. And what it meant was, the dictionary definition was the native inhabitants, the indigenous people. Okay? But since this was being used in relation to India, that's where Krishna appeared when he was here 5,000 years ago, I looked it up. I Google, like everybody else does, Aborigine India. And I got the word Adivas. Adivas. And Adivas, when you break that down, means the same thing. Adi means original, and Vas means inhabitant. So anyway, from that we gather that these are the... But anyway, to give you a bit more information, these are people who are... This lady, she belonged to a group of people who... They're aboriginal, they were native people, but beyond that, they lived very simply. You know, the aboriginal people in India, even today, to date, I'll just read, I actually did some research on that and give you some ideas. They generally live in remote, inhospitable areas in the hills or the forests. They're very, from our perspective, they'd be considered very backward. You know, their livelihood is very primitive agriculture, low value, closed economy, very low level of technology or no level of technology. You know, just like hunter-gatherers kind of people. Generally, they live in a very kind of a relatively poverty-stricken condition with low levels of health and literacy. You know, I'm trying to give you paint a picture here. And they have their own language. They have their own religion. And their communities are not accountable to outside authority. You know, they're like a little kind of group. They're tribes, you know. In and of themselves, and also they're very, very reluctant to make contact with outside. They're kind of like, you know, socially inferior. They have like an inferiority complex about that. But that's them. Okay. To date, according to a census of 2011 census in India, there are still like 100 million people in that category. And this lady shaking her head. She's from India. She knows. And they're all, you know, in different parts of India. And to this day, that's how they live. Okay, so this lady was from that socioeconomic background. Probably earlier in this day, you know, when she met Krishna that morning, she probably came from the forest, came from the jungle there where the other members of the tribe were. She was an old lady, it's mentioned. Okay, she just wandered out there. I doubt she went to the market and bought those fruits that she had in the basket. She probably just picked those fruits off a tree someplace and put them in a basket. An old lady, there's no mention if she had a family, she had a husband, or anything like that, just trying to live, you know. She wanders into the village, or on the outskirts of the village. They don't even, you know, like to come into the village because they didn't want to be chased out or something like that. And she's there with a basket of fruits, and she's hoping that in exchange for these fruits, people are going to give her something of value, some grains or whatever, so that she could live, survive, you know. And so there she is with her bag of fruits. And Krishna sees, and he's lifts a little child there, and he says, oh, okay, I want these fruits, you know. So he grabs a handful of grains, and but he's just such a young child that as he's coming towards her, he's dropping. The grains are, you know, whatever he had in his hands, some rice or this or that, it's dropping out of his hands. So by the time he's getting to where she is, and he's not aware of that, Krishna's not aware of that. She's seeing it, though, that he's losing all the grains on the way. And she's probably, it's not like if she accepts him, she's going to be able to go and pick them all up or something like that. She sees what's going on. By the time Krishna gets there, he practically has no grains in hand. But she's decided that, you know what, I don't care. I'm going to take a loss on this. I don't care. I'm going to give this kid the fruits. He's so cute. He's so adorable. I'm going to give him the fruits, whatever he winds up giving me, even if it's just two or three grains. And so he gets there, and she does it. She says, okay, Krishna, take whatever fruits you like. You know, just help yourself. So Krishna takes whatever he can hold in his hands, and he happily goes off, you know, and she's smiling and just thinking, what an adorable little child, you know. It's so nice. And meantime, then the next thing she looks... down. She looks at a basket where the fruits were, and the basket is full with valuable gems and jewels. Notes, Krishna performed a miracle to reward her for her kindness and affection like that. So that's what happened, according to the witnesses, the observers, and that was recorded, and that's, you know. So what's the significance of this? Well, our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada mentions in his commentary on the verse that says, from this incident one should learn that anything offered to Krishna with love and affection, one should learn that for anything offered to Krishna with love and affection, Krishna can reciprocate many millions of times, both materially and spiritually. The basic principle involves exchange of love. So that's certainly there. You know that. And this is more like, you have to understand, I think these commentaries that were written by our spiritual master are mostly for members. You know, this, he's kind of focusing in on the kind of things that people are already devotees, you know, like who kind of bought into this way of thinking and this living, would need to hear. So that's there, and I think you could relate to that as well. But maybe like a message that also could be, you know, given to add to that would be that we could just see how merciful, you know, how a quality of Krishna was that no discrimination. You know, it wasn't like, you know, this is like a homeless person practically who's coming in, and Krishna wasn't reluctant to give his mercy, you know, to reciprocate and benedict this lady who is, you know, really kind of from a, how would you say, a social or economic weaker position, you know, inferior kind of situation. Bad karma is the way we would refer to it. But he gave her the mercy. You know, why? Because she, with whatever she had going for her, she was prepared to try to be nice to Krishna, and Krishna reciprocated. And this is an important point because, you know, God does not, Krishna, God, he doesn't discriminate. And just like that expression, equal opportunity employer, probably everybody's heard. Yeah, so he's an equal opportunity, not employer, but reciprocator. And as anybody who approaches Krishna, they could be from very elevated background socially or from a very degraded background socially. Krishna doesn't care. It's, you know, it's not dependent upon your position socially. I think even, I remember watching some movie about St. Francis of Assisi, and it was showing him, you know, when he built that church out in the woods there, a lot of the people, they were very kind of like poor people and this and that. I mean, no, it's God's mercy. It's not just for the rich and successful and the, you know, the beautiful. And, no, it's there for any soul that is prepared to want it and approach him with these kind of qualities, you know, make some attempt to you know, relate to him. So that's there, and then that's something that's kind of like an important point in our scriptures, in the book called the Bhagavad Gita, which that's not this one but a different scripture we have. There's a statement that says, Krishna says, even though they be of lower birth, women, vaishyas, he's talking about lower. He says, if they take shelter of me, you know, if they, you know, fully try to, how would you say, reestablish their relationship with me, I reciprocate with that. And even more beyond that, there's a verse from another part of this book, the Srimad Bhagavatam, that says, Kirata Hunanda Pulinda Pulkasha Abirya Sumba Yavana Kasadaya Ye Necha Papa Yadapashraya Shraya Sudyanti Tasmai Prabhavishnabe Namaha. So what that verse is referring to is this. In India they have like a, you probably heard of the caste system, right? Okay. So we don't refer to it as the caste system. We call it the Vanashram Dharma. But so basically, you know, nutshell description of it is that there's different divisions of society. The highest division is called the Brahmanas, and they are like a scholarly, priestly class, right? Then below them are the Kshatriyas, who are like an administrative class, like your government, okay? Below them are Vaishyas, and that's like mercantile or commerce, business and commerce and like that. And below them are Sudras or laborers, you know, people who just kind of get the jobs done, so to speak. Now, beyond those, even outside those four divisions that I just mentioned, there are what's called Panchamas, which means the fifth divisions and beyond that. And those that verse I just quoted was describing the Panchamas, you know, the Kirata, Huninda. These are people who are considered outside that social system, and they're considered, once again, socially inferior. So this lady was from, you know, the social outcasts divisions like that. Actually, I think she was she was one of those. And but so what? You know, that's not an impediment. That's not an impediment. God's mercy is there for everyone. She was, you know, from a socially very inferior kind of situation, but Krishna had no hesitation in reciprocating with her, and both materially and spiritually. So this is an important lesson that we can get from this. And, you know, it kind of relates to what I was saying originally, that Krishna's whole purpose in coming to this material world is to help souls come back to the spiritual world. There's a nice verse in, once again, in another one of our scriptures. It goes, Vijivanaya Sampane Brahmani Gavihastini Suni Chaiva Swapakecha Pandita Samadarshana. That a humble sage sees by virtue of true knowledge a learned and gentle Brahmin, a cow, a dog, a dog eater, etc. Maybe I missed one. But the idea being that somebody who's really elevated in knowledge, spiritually enlightened, it's not like they don't see. I mean, you know, somebody who's a sage, he'll see, oh yeah, that's a cow, that's a horse, that's a dog, that's a dog eater, like that. That's a priest. But that's not what's important to him. What's important to him is that he's understanding that in that body is a soul. You know, that soul is part and parcel of Krishna. That soul is originally a beloved offspring, spiritual offspring of Krishna, who was originally in the spiritual world due to misuse of their free will. They're here in the material world, maybe in the body of a priest, maybe in the body of a dog, maybe in the body of an elephant, maybe in the body of a cow or a dog eater. Doesn't matter. Let me relate to that person in a spiritual way and try to help that person. Try to help that person make progress towards reviving their awareness of their original nature, their real identity, and their eternal relationship with Krishna. See, so that's an enlightened person tries to do that. How much more so would that be the case for Krishna, the supreme, you know, the supreme being? So that's what's, you know, going on here in this verse, and that's what Krishna's whole purpose is of you know, performing, coming into this material world, performing these pastimes to try to attract us, inspire us, encourage us to try to reestablish that relationship with him so that we can get out of this material world, so we don't have to remain in what's called the cycle of birth and death, which is, if you stop and think about it a little bit, it's not really such a great thing to be in. I mean, right now most of us young and healthy and like that, but you just have to kind of think a little bit, and you know, you can imagine what it's going to be like 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now. It gets pretty uncomfortable. Nobody likes getting old, sick, dying like that, and then having to go through the whole thing again. In the mornings lately, we've been reading from a different part of this book, and it's describing what the child in the womb experiences. And it's not very, I mean, the descriptions aren't very pleasant. You know, it's kind of, it's not a happy situation. So that's why, you know, Krishna's coming. He's trying to get us out of this. It's like somebody trying to help somebody who's a prisoner, a convict, get out of the prison. Krishna's trying to help us get out of this material world, go back to where we originally came from, where we belong, which is with him in the spiritual world. And, so that's the gist of it, I think. And I could stop there, and I hope I got some questions. Okay. Amala Bhakti Maharaj, our resident sannyasi, has a question or a comment. Anything is welcome. Anyway, was that clear? Did it make sense what I was saying? Okay, all right. Yep. So we're waiting for a mic. Okay.
Thank you for a nice explanation and overview of the Krishna consciousness philosophy. I just had one question which relates to a few of the things that were mentioned, And that is, you mentioned that Krishna comes here to help us, to relieve us of the sufferings and miseries and difficulties, and to help us ultimately return to the eternal or spiritual world where those things do not exist. It's a world of peace, a world of joy, a world of continuous service. So perhaps I think everyone would like to know, first of all, why would I want to leave such a world? Why leave that world to come to a world here which is full of suffering? So what would be my motive to do that? I can understand the motive to want to leave this world, which is full of miseries and sufferings, but that's a world of peace and joy and happiness and affection and warmth and surrender and submission. It's a world of unity and harmony, togetherness, oneness. So why leave that world? Perhaps you can explain that to us.
Yeah. No good reason.
There must be a reason.
Oh, there's a reason, but it's not a good one.
Yeah, well, that's another thing.
The reason is this, that just like right now, we're all sitting here in this room, okay? And at every moment, we all have a choice. You can continue to sit here and think, well, okay, let me continue to listen to this guy. Maybe he's making a bit of sense and I'm learning a bit. Or at any moment, you could decide to get up and just walk out. It's like a moment-to-moment free will, a choice that you have. So in the same way, we're in the spiritual world. We have a service attitude. As I mentioned, where our constitutional position is, we like to use that phrase, that's constitutional position, is that we're eternal servants of God. Notice we're meant to try to engage in activities that give pleasure to the transcendental senses, the spiritual senses of Krishna, the Supreme Person. That's what we're meant to do. But at the same time, it's just like being in this room. We're meant to sit here and listen to me for another few minutes, hopefully only. But you don't have to. At any second, you could just get up, stand up, and walk out. So in the same way in the spiritual world, our constitutional position is to try to engage in activities, give transcendental pleasure to Krishna, but we can allow that service attitude to deteriorate. And when we allow our service attitude to deteriorate, and we, rather than wanting, cultivating that desire to love and serve Krishna, when we allow that mentality to be eclipsed by the mentality of, you know what? Why does it always have to be the Krishna show? Why can't it be my show? I want to be, in the spotlight. I think I could do a good job of being the number one and, getting all the attention and all the worship and all the service. And, if we allow ourselves, we allow that to creep in to our consciousness, then we're heading down that slippery slope. And if that develops to a significant enough degree, that's when we leave the spiritual world and we come here to the material world. We're not kicked out. It's not like you're grabbed and... No, we basically allow it to happen by allowing our service attitude to deteriorate to the point where it's unfavorable, unacceptable. And just like, once again, going back to the analogy of living here in the United States, nobody's forced to go to jail in one sense. No, I mean, nobody's forced to become a criminal. People make that choice. They don't have to be a criminal. There's people who, all around them, they're faced with the same circumstances, but they don't choose to, resort to crime to improve their situation. They just go on, trying to be good citizens. So in the same way, we're in the spiritual world. We're not forced to start, allow our service attitude to deteriorate, but unfortunately some of us do. And as a result of that, we come here to the material world. The majority don't. I once heard... right here in Los Angeles, our spiritual master was up in his quarters there, and some professor asked him that question, what percentage of all the souls come here to the material world? And he responded, he said, 10%. And then he thought about it for a second, and he said, less than 10%. So in other words, most of the people like us, the souls like us, remain eternally in the spiritual world. They never come here to the material world. 10% or less come here to the material world. So we're in that, the bottom of our class, so to speak. We're in the lower 10%. And that's how we got here. We allowed our service attitude to deteriorate and get to a point where it's not acceptable. And now we just have to take advantage. This human form of life is an opportunity to turn that around. you know, to try to develop a favorable service attitude towards Krishna or God, and so that, you know, at the end, when that's achieved, then we go back to live eternally with Him in the spiritual world. Does that answer your question, Maharaj? Okay. Anybody else have a question? Any of our guests have a question? Yeah. Okay.
Prabhuji, just half an hour back, I talked to my son who left the United States for 20 years. He was here. He went to Mysore.
Where to?
Mysore.
Okay.
And he was having a child, 1.5 years. Today, my son said, talk to this girl. Her name is Tanvi Shri. I usually tell my son, tell the baby you are Atma and you are Paramatma. Atma, you are Paramatma. So that the child will imbibe these things in itself, so that it will grow with all soul full of Atma,
you know, Mata,
and Paramatma.
I'm having a little problem with the accent.
Yeah. Atma and Paramatma.
Can I take your question afterwards?
Yeah, this is the... So, is it okay if I tell it to my son and son is going to tell it to his daughter?
Well, be honest with you, before I attempt to answer your question, I need to talk to you.
Yes.
Because I'm not sure I'm understanding exactly what you're asking. So, we'll have to talk. After the class, we'll talk.
Okay.
And we'll... Once I understand clearly
sure.
what you're saying, then I'll give you an
my
answer.
My English is a little different.
Not bad. It's not bad. It's just my ears aren't that great. Does anybody have any... Okay, see, that's what we'll do. We'll stop here, and feel free to ask any of our, you know, members here any question you have. Thank you very much. I hope that was okay. John.